Good evening. Would anybody like to identify themselves?
It's Richard.
How are you, Richard?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Why don't we get started?
Getting a little static, Anouk. I'm getting a little static.
Getting static?
Yeah.
And I'm going to change the controls.
All right.
Please say again.
I said I was getting your kid. I was. Are you changing the controls?
I heard that there's some static, but there's a couple of people on the line, and I didn't.
It's garbled on my end. It's garbled. Hannah, this is Hannah, and it's garbled.
Okay, I'm going to change the controls so that in order to speak, you'll have to press R6. And please verify that the static and the garbling has ceased. If not, I'll call back and we'll start over.
Did you say...
Please check that the static and the garbling are gone. You'll have to press R6 so I can hear.
You had to press it or we did?
You do.
Okay. I think I'm going to hang up and try again. Not sure I hear anything correctly. So I'm going to hang up and try again. Okay?
All right. And Richard, are you, is the static gone? You have to press R6 to be heard, Richard. I hear you now. Is the static on or is it still there?
It's gone.
And I
okay,
found that
thank
better.
You. Now press. Okay. So why don't we begin? I'm having computer problems also, so give me a second to get organized again. Please join me in singing the Alakoa. I love the Kohak. Could you press star 6 and mute your phone, please? Could you latch a mean ha? This first verse connects us to the phrase Ahabatinam, unconditional love. Kabel
Rinat
Kufet Tet Benayim. Yafid Geyeh Lamcha Pene Zogrei Kishata Yud Gimel Lamed Pei Zayin Kuf. Shabbatenu Kabel Ushma Tziakatenu Yodea The letters of the month of Shabbat that connect us to the first verse. The letters of the Tzadi that created the constellation Li, the water carrier, the Aquarius, and the Bet that created the planet Shabbatai, the planet Saturn. Together they have a gematria of 92, which connects us to the unity of the spiritual world with the physical world. And the eighth verse, we say in a whisper. I'm reading from the Zohar, from the Parsha Bo. I'm reading verse number 7 of the second section. When the actions of the children of Israel were found to be improper, the appointed messengers stand against these actions of Israel and stand by Hashem. For when the children of Israel perform actions that are not good, they weaken, so to speak, the strength of the Holy One, blessed be He. When they perform good actions, they give might and power to the Holy One, blessed be He. Of this it is written, give strength to Elohim. How is strength given? By good actions to Elohim. How is strength given? By good actions. Therefore, all the appointed ministers gathered by Hashem on that day, upon Hashem most certainly, for they gathered to bring accusations upon Israel, which amounts to having gathered against Hashem to weaken his strength, so to speak. This Sohar is very difficult to understand. Can anything that an angel does affect or impact or be a cause upon Hashem? Can anything that human beings do be a cause upon Hashem? Hashem is God. Hashem is, there is none else. Hashem is not impacted or affected by anything that any other entity does. He created those entities. So how can we imply that he is impacted by them? If I do a negative action, I weaken Hashem? Of course, the rabbis have explained that it's metaphorical. But it's actually not just metaphorical. It's actually a real impact. Because one of the essences that Hashem created was a negative system and a positive system offsetting it. And we use the name Hashem to refer to both. We use the name Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei to refer to both. And sometimes we're speaking, as we say Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, and we're speaking about the ultimate creator, the light of the end of the fulfillment that cannot be affected by anything that the creations do. And sometimes when we use Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, we're speaking about that creation of the good system that is in contrast to the negative system, and which the balance of the two gives us free will. And that balance is affected by the actions of human beings. Not by angels, but the angels report to the judgment place, to that courtroom on Rosh Hashanah. They also report at other times. But this is kind of why some of the teachings become confusing. I'm giving a lot of static, so I would like...
Yeah, I can hardly understand.
If you would press star 6, I'd appreciate it. That would mute your phone, Barbara. And while you cannot be heard, it should cut out the static. Yeah, I'm not getting the static now. So in order to ask questions, you can unmute yourself. Feel free to do that. And maybe the static won't come back at that time. It's we don't really understand why we're getting the static. But this way, we shouldn't be getting any static on the recording. Does anybody have any questions? And you do need to press star 6 to unmute your phone to be heard. Okay, I'm going to start by giving the handout that I'll be reading from tonight. It's the same as last week. It's yeshem.com/Kabbalah Advanced Reincarnation 1.htm. Last week we left out the number 1. So I'm now going to spell it. Hopefully slowly, www.yeshshem.com/Kabbalah, spelled K-A-B-B-A-L-H, hyphen, advanced, spelled A-D-V-A-N-C-E-D, hyphen, reincarnation, reincarnation, hyphen, the numeral 1.htm. And what this is a translation that is published online by KabbalahOnline.com. The translation was started, it is on the book, Sharei Gilgulim, which translates as the Gate of Wheels, but it really refers to the Gate of Reincarnation. And it's the teachings of Rabbi Luria, Isaac Luria, taught to his student, Rabbi Chaim Vital, and then amended by Rabbi Chaim Vital's son, Shmuel. The translation was started by Rabbi Shabtai Eicher, but unfortunately he passed away in the process and never completed it. So at some point we will start realizing that the commentary is coming from Rabbi Peretz Orbach rather than Rabbi Teicher. And I also would like you all to note that many times we will be repeating material or be saying things that you might already know. And the Kabbalah Online, plus all of the teachers that I have ever connected with, have always said that you need to study the Kabbalistic texts over and over again until you become, at a minimum, familiar with the vocabulary and its meaning. But even just to be able to break the klipa, the same material has to be read and studied over and over. This is a process of breaking the negative shell that is keeping us from fully integrating the teachings into our life. We are now going to read chapter 1, part 2, and the subject tonight is growing spiritually as a code phrase. And the question that's being asked is, why is it so difficult to relate to spirituality? Now, the question assumes that the statement is correct, that it is difficult to relate to spirituality. And we will be talking about that. He does not acquire all of them, all the five levels of soul at one time, but rather according to his worthiness. At first, he obtains the lowest of them, which is called nefesh. Afterwards, if he so merits, he then also attains ruach. This is explained in several places in the Zohar, such as in Parashat Vayechi, Parashat Truma, and specifically at the beginning of Parashat Mishpatim. Come and see, when a person is born, he is given a nefesh. This is a commentary from Rabbi Teicher. The Sephirot are like a family tree with multiple generations. Although a person begins life with only a nefesh, he has the potential to ascend to higher levels of soul according to his merit, as elucidated below, or as we'll explain below. All nefeshot are only from the world of Asiya. All ruchot are from the world of Yetzirah, and all neshamot are from the world of Briah. However, the majority of people do not have all five parts, which are called nefesh, ruach, and neshama, chaya yechida, but they only have the nefesh from Asiya. We have seen at the end of the previous section that the abbreviation for all five levels of soul is Naran Chai. Since the uppermost levels of Chaya and Yechida are inaccessible now, they are often ignored, and the short form is even more abbreviated to Naren. Late in history, as we are, and distant from Mount Sinai, as we are, most people only have access to the nefesh level of their soul, which is why it is so difficult to relate to God and spirituality. Now you have my commentary, which is incomplete. The reason it's incomplete, and I apologize, is I did not have sufficient time this week to comment about these things in writing, so I'm going to do it verbally. Why is it so difficult to relate to spirituality? Rabbi Teicher has given us an explanation, and his explanation is that the soul is the lowest level, And because it's the lowest level, it's difficult to relate to God. And since God is the essence of spirituality, it's difficult to relate to that. But he hasn't defined the term spirituality. And we need to understand the term in order to understand why it's so difficult to relate to spirituality. One of my teachers defines spirituality as sharing. Another of my teachers defines spirituality as entities that lack a garment called a body so that they can be perceived by other entities. To give you a further explanation of that or a deeper understanding, there are things we call ghosts in this world. Why can't we perceive them? Why can't we sense them? Some people do, but the majority of people do not sense these entities that we refer to as ghosts. And these ghosts typically do not interact with anything in the physical world. They exist or they coexist side by side with physical entities, but they don't interact with them. What is a ghost? It's a spiritual entity that has no body. It has no ability to be sensed by other entities. It can sense other entities. It can see the physical bodies of people. In fact, in Judaism, there is a custom when someone dies and has been buried for the 7 days, which is called Shiva, the sitting of Shiva, the mourning period of 7 days. During that period, the mirrors in the home of the deceased are covered. Because, as the Zohar explains, that soul of the deceased is moving between the grave where the body is, and which is his home, which is his favorite clothing, and he moves to his home, which is also a form of a garment, a larger garment over the body, around the body. But he moves to the home because that's where he knows to go. And he hears his family, his friends speaking about him. And that's why we should say good things about him, because it gives him pleasure to hear people say good things about him. And upsets, and he has enough to be upset about because he's left the world. So we don't want to say negative things about him. And he looks at the people and he tries to talk to the people, and guess what? They can't hear him. They have no way to hear him. He's speaking. He knows he's speaking, but they're not hearing him. He's seeing them, but he can't. They don't see him. And if he were to stand in front of a mirror, he would look in the mirror expecting to see himself, like every morning when he shaved or every morning when she put her makeup on. But because the mirror doesn't reflect spiritual entities, only physical entities, he can't be seen. She can't be seen in the mirror. And that is a very painful shock to the person to realize he's dead, that he's died, that he's left his body. Because as far as he's concerned, if he looks down, he sees the image of his body exactly the same as whether he had a physical body. Now, we're defining spirituality, spiritual. Spiritual these two definitions are correct. These two definitions are not mutually exclusive. And this is part of the problem. How can we relate to spiritual when we can't sense it? How can we relate to sharing when we were created and live with a basis of a desire to receive for oneself alone? Is it hard to share? How many people in the world volunteer to serve in a homeless shelter? How many people volunteer to donate funds or work in a various different kinds of charities? It is difficult to share. It is difficult to sense an entity that does not have a physical form. That's why it's difficult to relate to spirituality.
I'm continuing. However, even the nefesh has many levels, and this is because Asiya itself also divides into five parts of theme, called Arichan Din, Abba, Ima, Zeran Din, and Nukva de Zeran Din. The word partsuf, the plural is partsufim, literally means face in Aramaic. In the Kabbalah, it also refers to the entire human shape. In general, there are 10 sephirot. Keter, Chachma, Bina, Chesed, Gevura, Tiferet, Netzach, Chod, Yesod, and Malchut. However, each one is localized, is a localized version of the entire system. In other words, it is possible to discern within each one of them 10 component sephirot, and within each one of those 10 others, etc. This may be likened to a photograph taken with a holograph, where any detail may be blown up to reveal at the basic information that is contained in the whole picture, the whole photograph. All the basic information of the whole is contained in the detail, and the detail contains all the basic information found in the whole. When we see a number of sephirot joined together, working together, and functioning together as a system, then they are called a partsuf. Each partsuf has a unique name, and these correspond to the names of the sephirot, the names of the soul, and the names of the worlds, as discussed previously in Chapter 1 and Section 1. From this point down, there's a corresponding relationship being described. The name of the soul is connected to a world, which is connected to a sephirah, which is connected to a partsuf, which is also connected to the tetragrammaton, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. And it's also connected to the spelled out names. I'm going to give my commentary now before I read you these relationships. This is something that it's almost never discussed by Kabbalah teachers. The reason they don't discuss it, and the reason I'm discussing it, I'll go into. The reason they don't discuss it is that it takes study to break klipa. The vocabulary that's being used is confusing because the same term seems to refer two different things, and it doesn't. So let's talk about these ideas. What is a soul? The soul is the same thing as a sephirah. It's the same thing as a world, except the soul represents the fulfillment. It represents light. The sephirah represents a vessel to reveal that light. The world represents the sephirah and the light in unity. It may not be a perfect unity. It may not be the appropriate unity. Because I could have the soul of Nefesh, meaning the light of Nefesh, sitting in the sephirah, the sephirah of Keter. Nefesh is not meant to fulfill Keter. It's meant to fulfill Nefesh. Excuse me, to fulfill Malchut. But the fact that it is a light within a vessel, it's considered a world. The world is one of chaos. The world is not perfect. And anything that's not perfect is called chaotic. This is rarely explained to people. The Kabbalists just go ahead and use the term. They write about these terms and they expect you to understand them. They expect them to be you to be able to use this vocabulary like it's the back of your hand. That's why my teacher, Rabbi Berg, taught the four phases, and Rabbi Ashlag before him taught the four phases, and said it needed to be studied to such a degree that it became the back of your hand. Now, let's look at the rest of this list. Each sephirah has a partsuf within it. The typical definition of a partsuf, as Rabbi Teicher explained, it means face, but it means to, it's typically referred to as a structure of 10 sephirot. And the structure of 10 sephirot can be metaphorically related to the structure of the human body. Now, what does that actually mean? In every sephirah, there are sephirot within it. So there's, in every keter, there is a keter, a chachma, a bina, a zeranpin, and a malchut within that keter. And then there is within that each of those 10, and I only mentioned 5 to save time, in each of those 10, there are 10 more. And in each of those 10, there are 10 more. And in each of those 10, there are 10 more. And know this truth. Every chachma in every one of those frames of reference called sephirot, every chachma can connect with every other chachma. But every chachma can only connect 2 levels below it and 2 levels above it for a total of 5. Now, the tetragrammaton is a metaphor to explain these levels of consciousness called sephirot or world or soul or partsuf. I'm not using the terms interchangeably because I'm describing different effects and affects different causes. When we use the name of the Sephirot as a process, and we use the name of the Sephirot as an existence. The Tetragrammaton becomes a metaphor to help us understand where in the relationship we are. And the same thing applies to the spelled out names, which have a gematria, and they're usually referred to based on their gematria. And I'll explain that after we go through the different relationships. So, if there's no questions, I'll just continue with the reading of what's on this page at this time. Yechida is the highest level of soul, the highest light. It means singular, as we've said. Its world is Adam Kadmon. Its Sephirah is Keter, which means crown. Its Partsuf is Arikan Pin, which means the long face. In the Tetragrammaton, it's the Yud, but not the whole Yud, just the dot that starts the Yud. The first point of the scribe's pen on the paper, when he starts to make a Yud, that first touching of the paper where the ink spreads through the grains of the paper, the atoms of the paper, that is the relationship in the Tetragrammaton. There is no spelled out name at that level of consciousness. And please do not make the mistake. Each of these words means something else, and each of them are describing a level of consciousness. The next is Chaya, the life force. The world is Atzilut, emanation. The Sephirah is Chokhmah, wisdom. The Partsuf is Abba, father. The Tetragrammaton, the rest of the Yud, the totality of the Yud. And it's called Abba, father, Aleph, Bet, or Ayin Bet, actually. And Av has a gematria 72. This is the spelled out name of the Tetragrammaton, meaning if I say the letter Yud, I'm actually saying the three letters Yud, Vav, and Dalet. But I only hear the first letter. The Vav and Dalet are being said, but they're in a concealed form. When I say the letter Hey, I can spell Hey, Hey Yud, Hey Hey, or Hey Aleph. And therefore, the Tetragrammaton spells out in different numerical values. The Ab, the highest level of 72, has 10 letters. And those 10 letters have a gematria of 72. And that's all related to the level of Chokhmah, and the level of the Chaya, and the level of the Atzilut, and the level of the Yud. The next level, the Neshama, which means breath, the world is Bria, meaning creation. The Sephirah is Bina, understanding. The Partsuf is Ima. And the Tetragrammaton, it's the upper He.
And when spelled out, it has a gematria of 63, but also 10 letters. Sixty-three is coming from Yud Vav Dalet. Hey Yud. Vav Aleph Vav. Hey Yud. When you add those letters up in gematria, it comes to 63. The next level, the Ruach, which means wind. The world is Yetzirah, meaning formation. The Sefirah is Chesed. Two Yesod, the six levels of Zeranpin. And Zeranpin means the short, the near, or the small face in Aramaic. And the Vav is the letter in the Tetragrammaton, but when it's spelled out, Yud Vav Dalev, Hey Aleph. Vav Vav, Hey Aleph, you have a total of 45. The lowest level, that of the Nefesh, meaning rested, meaning comes to rest, the world is Asiyah, the world of action. The Malchut is the Sefirah, meaning kingdom. It's also the Partsuf is the Nukva de Zeranpin, the feminine consort of Zeranpin. A short face is Zeranpin, the small face meaning Zeranpin. The Tetragrammaton is using the lower He, and the Ben is spelled Yud Vav Dalet. Hey, hey, I believe. Vav, Aleph, Vav. Hey, hey. I may be wrong in that spelling, but I'll have to look it up and put it down another time. It should be noted that the Sefirot, according to the names of the Partsufim, resemble a family tree of three generations. The grandfather, the parents, the child, and his bride. Let me confuse you, or try and not let you get confused. This is my commentary on what I've said up till now. If you look at the tree of life, Chachma and Bina represent the grandfather level. My mistake. The grandfather level is represented by Keter, the crown. Chachma and Bina represent the parents, the father and the mother. They had two children. One is Zeranpin, the male, and one is Malchut, the female. And incestuously, the male, Zeranpin, is married to the bride, Malchut. That is an understanding and a way of the relating to the Sefirot to each other. But there are other ways of relating the Sefirot to each other. I'm continuing to read. Before a person can merit to attain his Ruach from the world of Yetzirah, he must first be complete in all of the five Partsufim of the Nefesh of Asiyah. In other words, though a person begins life with a nefesh, it too has higher levels that must be attained through spiritual growth and rectification. When all the levels of nefesh are rectified, corrected,
that a person is ready to ascend to a higher spiritual level, that of the level of Ruach. He then repeats this process of growth on this higher spiritual plane. What this means is to correct the lowest level of soul and complete the lowest level of soul, there must be a growth of 50 levels. That growth has to be the whole 10 sefirot of the Partsuf. For each of the five levels within them. What it's saying is that in order to get a Ruach, one must master the Nefesh of his Nefesh, must correct the Ruach of the Nefesh, must balance the Neshama of his Nefesh, and continue that process through the Chaya and the Yechidah of his Nefesh. Once he has acquired the Yechidah of his Nefesh, then the entire level of Nefesh is said to be his, and he is ready to work on acquiring the levels of Ruach. Does anybody understand what I have said today? Does anybody have any questions? I'm going to change the controls, and hopefully the static and the garbling won't recur. Does anybody have any questions or comments about what I've said so far?
I'm going to have to read it over and over.
That's what it takes, over and over. Mm-hmm. It is a very, it's not that it's difficult, but it's terms you're not used to. And even if you think you are used to it, what I've just explained is a very deeper understanding of how these terms relate to each other. Because many times when your first student first comes to Kabbalah, and even after many years of study, they hear the term Chachma, and they know it's a Sefirah. But is it talking about the Sefirah that has got a light within it? Then they would be using the word Atzilut for the world. Or are they talking about a completed structure, a corrected Chachma? Then they would be calling it a Partsuf. They would be calling it by the name of Abba. Or sometimes they'll just say, we're talking, you know, they'll put the Tetragrammaton relationship in and say it's the Yud. And sometimes they'll say, we're talking about Abba, the level of 72. And you hear these terms, and you need to know them so intimately that in your mind, in your worldview of how you are relating to the material, you need to know where in that visual picture of the Tree of Life are you. Are you in the Sefirah? The Partsuf of the Sefirah of the world. Where are you? Because frequently you'll see those terms and you say, oh, they're the same thing. The Sefirah is the same as the world. It's the same as the Partsuf. It's the same as the Tetragrammaton. And it's not. Each of them, because in the Hebrew language, no word, there's no synonyms. No word has a synonym. It cannot mean something else. Two words cannot be the same thing.
and it leads to a lot of confusion for Americans and English-speaking people because they're used to synonyms. They're used to two words meaning the same thing and saying, oh, I can translate both those words the same. Chachma and Abba are the same thing. They're not. The Partsuf of Abba is within the Sefirah of Chachma. It may be fulfilled by the light of Yeshiva, but it may not be fulfilled by the light of Yeshiva. It could be fulfilled by the light of Nefesh. But I need to know which it is in order to discuss how the process is moving forward. Is the process orderly or chaotic? I don't know unless I'm using the right terms. This is the major teaching of this section. And essentially, we're almost out of time. We only have about 5 minutes left. So I'm not going to start part three. But I will answer questions about part two. The language of Kabbalah is exact. It's like a formula. It's a science. A formula, E equals MC squared, tells you everything you need to know about either the speed of the thing or its location. We know from the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, which is a false principle, only works in certain frames of reference. We know from the Heisenberg uncertainty principle that the measurement of speed interacts with the entity doing the speed and changes it. So I cannot know its location at the same time I know its speed. And vice versa, I can know its location but not its speed. That's what the science of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle establishes. The same thing is true when I say Chachma of Abba of Atzilut with the Nefesh. I'm giving you the same thing. It's exact. It's a formula. But if you're thinking that those four terms are the same thing, they're not. And I cannot stress that enough. I can tell you from my own studies how confusing things were till this became clear to me. Are there any other questions?
May I ask a question? I'm not sure if it's a question or a statement, but as I read through the different Kabbalah books that I had during the summer, and of course terms like this, came up a lot. So I started a sheet for each Sephirot, and as I would come across maybe one chart would show names of Hashem that would go with each Sephirot. Another book or another page or whatever, I'd see that there would be an archangel or a patriarch or a color or a food, a letter, one of the vowels. And so I began putting those things on those same sheet. Also terms like Ab and father and mother and Zer Anapin, you know, should I continue to do that? Will it eventually lead to possibly understanding this a little more? I knew the levels, or I knew the names of the levels, and I even found a graphic that illustrated that. And, of course, I know about the worlds from the Sephirot, the Tu B'Shvat Seder, but they're all just like different pages of notes for me at this point.
Let me give you something that's really going to freak you out.
Okay.
So I'm going to tell you in advance this is going to freak you out because it's going to imply that all of that work was for naught.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's okay. I like to be corrected, you know, because there's no one to correct me.
The work is that you did is helpful. Rabbi Ashlag is clear in his statements and his teachings when he says, do not look at this material from a physical standpoint. When you put these relationships on a piece of paper, when you look at the glyph, the diagram of the tree of life, you're seeing a two-dimensional piece of relationship. But the Sephirot are not two-dimensional, they're ten-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
At the minimum, they're four-dimensional. And we need to understand them in four dimensions. So when you mentally visualize them as two dimensions, you're missing the point. You're losing clarity.
Okay.
Can it be done by just mental visualization of ten dimensions? Yes, it can. But that's where it takes the practice of meditation and connecting to your intuition for you to be able to visualize that. Rabbi Ashlag says, don't ever look at a cliff. Don't ever look at the tree of life in two dimensions. Understand it from words and make those words be your mind picture. Not as words, but as a picture. But if you overlay the words onto the two-dimensional view, you're going to get lost and confused. Those are my words, the last sentence.
Okay.
Now, you mentioned different angels, different vowels, and they all relate to the same, just as I've listed, and not just I, but the translation of the Ari listed these relationships. We have to understand, what is a vowel? The vowel is the power, the enlivening, literally the power that goes into the letter, the sound of a letter. Because a letter has a sound by itself, but when we put a vowel to it, it becomes powerful, it becomes empowered. So when you say, well, I have a relationship of the vowel to the Sephirot, to the world, how does that empowerment interact with these other things that I've said to you? When you have a name of an angel, you have to understand that the name of an angel is describing its mission. It's not his name, like my name is Hanoch, but my mission is teacher or student. And when I'm a student, can I also be a teacher? That would be a third category. These are all part of what you're putting down in your relationships. And yes, when we put them on a piece of paper, it's easier to remember them. It's easier to follow them. But you always have to have 16,000 other points of information to be able to relate to the actual relationship. I hope I didn't scare you.
No.
I hope I was clear in what I was saying. I hope I was clear in what I was saying as well, Barbara.
Yes. I'm sure one day it's going to sink. It's going to get there.
It will. You have to break the klipa. And the only way you break the klipa is to study. And you study the same material. The Talmud says you need to study the same material 101 times. And then it proceeds to describe a story of a particular sage who was teaching a student who wasn't particularly quick or bright, who every point had to be explained 400 different ways, 400 different explanations before he was able to understand what the teacher was trying to get across. And the teacher, being a master teacher, wanted to get across every point because he had accepted this man as his student. And so he sat with him explaining the same thing 400 different ways. This is what it takes if you're committed to the material, or if you want to be spoon-fed. This is what is happening in our world. Our world is a world of immediate gratification. But immediate gratification does not break a klipa. And we think we understand something when we read it the first time, and I am the worst one. I spent a number of hours driving in Los Angeles to and from work, and every one of those hours while I was the last, whatever, 10 years that I was doing it, 15 years that I was doing it, I was listening to different Kabbalah tapes in the car. And I would listen to them twice and thought that I understood what was being said. But I didn't do it 101 times. Well, I didn't have the time, did I? Or maybe I didn't take the time. And I've learned. I need to go back through those all the time. But what about studying moving on to the next book? There's two ways to study Kabbalah. You can absorb all the different writers, all the different teachers, or you can take one teacher and study and study and study. That's what builds the foundation by creating the breakage up of the klipa, so that you reveal the light within the klipa. And that's what's recommended to the student of Kabbalah. Any other questions? Announcements for this coming week. Thursday night at 10 p.m. will be a class on the tikkun, how to find your tikkun. It's going to be a series of classes, but the series will not follow exactly behind. I'm hearing the static, so I'm going to change the controls. If you want to make a comment or ask a question, please press star 6. So Thursday night at 10 p.m. will be the first of a discussion of how to find your individual tikkun, and how Yashem can assist you in doing that. The class Sunday morning is at 10 a.m. And that class is on the subject of science and Torah, where we will bring in what modern science has discovered or revealed or changed about their teachings, even as much as 40 years ago when I was a student, to today. one of the subjects we'll be discussing is the idea of evaporation. How when I was in school, it was explained one way, and now they have a totally different additional theory in where the rain comes from. And we will explain how all of this has been revealed in the Torah, and that the sages of the Torah knew this back 2,000 years ago, if not further, which they did further back to Moses. Monday will be class number 6, which is Binding by Striking Part 2, and it is highly recommended to every student to join the Binding by Striking classes. And next week, this time, I'm going to change the time of this class from 6 p.m., which is 7 p.m. Salt Lake time. I'm going to change it to 8 p.m. Salt Lake time and 7 p.m. L.A. time. Just the family and the relationships, I need that extra hour before my daughter gets home and relieves me from the babysitting duties, which I enjoy so much. So you can see we have a lot of classes, a lot of different subjects, and I think you'll find them quite interesting. I'm also going to be doing a Tanit Dibur, a fast of words, on the Shabbat Shira, the Shabbat of the Song, which is also the holiday of Tu B'Shvat, which is 2 weeks from last Shabbat. I believe that's going to be the 26th day of January, maybe the 25th. I get the two dates confused right now. But it will be an eight-hour session from 8 o'clock in the morning till 4 in the afternoon. It will be done under the conference call, the same number you called to get here today, the same codes. It will be 8 hours of speaking the words of the Psalms, listening to the Torah. The only words that you will hear, Bezrat Hashem, are words of Torah. There won't be the idea of mundane words. Hello, how are you will not be said, as long as I can remember to do that. That's the commitment. That's the idea of a Tanit Dibur, and it's a very difficult thing to do. So I hope you'll forgive me if I fail. Does anybody have any questions before I leave? I'm going to change the controls back so you can speak out.
I don't have questions, Hanel. Thank you so much.
Anybody have any final questions?
No, Hanel. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Have a beautiful
Hanel,
evening.
If we can only hear, if we can maybe only join in a certain time of the day, not the whole day, is that possible to just go ahead and dial the number and... Or does it have to be the whole?
If somebody else is on the call, somebody has to be on the call all day long. So as long as one person comes on, if that person goes off, but another person has come on before they go off, the recordings will be full complete. I will be reading it, the Psalms, in a complete way. But the recording may or may not be complete, depending on whether there are people listening. Since it's Shabbat, there's not a lot of people who like to break the Shabbat, which I understand. And the only reason we're doing the recording is because there are students who need that energy because they're in the process of healing some very severe illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And so from the standpoint of Pekuach Nefesh, saving of a life, it's, in my opinion, and I'm sure no other rabbi will agree with me, but in my opinion, it is appropriate to connect to this recordings, to support the recordings as you create your own vessel, your own desire to receive in order to help other people and share with other people. That's what's taking place. So, yes, no problem if you have to get off the line and go on. If there's somebody else on the line at the time, if it's a Tanit Dibur, you can't say, is anybody else there?
Right.
It's a mundane word.
Right.
So mm-hmm. We'll find out.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Is that by chance actually Tu B'Shvat? Because that would be also when
we would
be having our Seder, you know.
But Tu B'Shvat is on Saturday this year, on Shabbat. And that's
mm-hmm,
a very significant issue that I wrote about briefly in the monthly email. And I plan to write about when the Shalach comes out. Any other questions? Everybody have a beautiful week.